hon, it's me, Danielle. I am a licensed clinical mental health counselor, and I'm here to talk about all the ways multi-level marketing and mental health do not mix. It is important to know that this podcast is not meant to diagnose or for treatment. This podcast is based off of personal experiences and opinions, and is meant to educate and entertain. Now sit back and start healing with me on this episode of From Huns to Humans.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of From Huns to Humans. I am so excited today to have another therapist on. You guys might have seen her popping up in the anti-MLM spaces as, anti-MLM therapy? Therapy after MLM?
Therapy yeah, after MLM. Therapy underscore after underscore MLM.
Yes. Michelle Ayres, she was in Beachbody for quite some time, and I'm just so excited to hear your whole story. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me. This has been a long time coming. Before we actually hopped on here live, I was just telling Danielle how I have been waiting to get on a podcast, and I started consuming this podcast and another well-known one, and was binge listening to the episodes as I was walking in the evenings and like really like on the fence, ready to jump over to the other side. So I'm so grateful to be here. It's been a long time coming, and I'm in such the good space to be talking today.
And that's so funny that you say that, because I'm pretty sure there are episodes in the beginning of my podcast where I'm like, this podcast isn't for people that are still in their MLMs. And I've had so many people say, oh no, I did listen to it when I was still in. I was trying to get out. I was like, really? I never thought that this was like going to be meant for those people. Like it just was never my original intent, and it's just turned into like such a beautiful tool to help people see what's going on and wake up essentially.
I love this conversation already. I'm already like, I get really excited.
Me too.
I don't need coffee, but I drink it anyhow. And it's funny because that's kind of my place. I've been talking to a lot of people on my Instagram, is they're in it and they're like either just got out or they're like, oh my God, I hate this. And I'm like, I get it. Like I started consuming anti-MLM content like heavily a couple months before I got out. And so that it gave me the guts to get out. And I love that there's a whole crew of people, like probably countless people out there that are consuming this kind of stuff. And they're like, I don't know if I should pull the plug. And it's when you start asking questions, and it's literally searching anti-MLM, the hashtag on Instagram, that got me into the whole thing. And then I searched anti-MLM podcast. I don't even know how I found you. Probably because you were the guest on the other podcast that I love.
Yeah. It's so interesting how people end up finding stuff. And it's really interesting to me that you searched for anti-MLM while you were still in. Can we talk a little bit about that?
You betcha.
What got you to even like start searching?
Well, I was in Beachbody for 6 years, and I'm talking like not 6 years where I was kind of in, like I was full steam ahead for 6 years, and I did well. So it was my summer, like last summer, because I just pulled the plug 2 weeks ago on this. It was last summer. And I remember sitting in my living room with my three kids, like I'm a busy mom, man. My kids are young. And sitting there in my living room in the middle of a beautiful, hot summer day. And I was sitting there working on my laptop as they were all watching TV. And I was like, I just got so frustrated. I slammed my laptop shut. My husband came into the room and I was like, I effing hate this. That was the beginning for me. And then from there, it took me a year to finally quit. And how I found it is because over that year, I consider it like an unshackling over a year. I was shedding it over a year because I couldn't just pull the plug on something I'd built for that long and was all in on for that long. And so that's, it was part of like, kind of my final bit. And I watched Lula Rich and I was like, that's how I found you. I watched Lula Rich, I found Roberta, and then I found you because you were a guest on Roberta's podcast. And I was at a point where I was like, I felt isolated. I felt I needed therapy, even though that's my background. I was like, I need some here. I need to connect with people who get it. And it was just the noise in my ears and the processing I needed. And I binged a few episodes and it allowed me to process through all of it. So that's how it came to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. That, like, I remember being there too. Like, I remember Roberta's podcast was the first thing that I had listened to in the anti-MLM space. And I'm so glad it was, because it was so compassion-based and so just welcoming to the space. And it made me really hopeful that everything was going to be okay, because my only experience with anti-MLM while I was still in was just people telling me I was stupid.
The haters, if you're anti-MLM, all those people who call you a hater. And it's like, no, I am not a hater, because I was in it for 6 years deep, and now I see the other side. So I'm actually educated and informed, and I get it. And the compassion is so important, because you and I were just talking about that, how on Instagram there's so many people that are anti-MLM, but they go after specific ones, or they attack certain, as we call, hun, and rip them apart. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah,
it's heavy. And I do not do that, and I will not do that, and I will not name drop. And as much as I follow those people, and sometimes I'm like, oh, I see the content and it's like heart-wrenching, some of it, I won't do that on mine. I get the need for compassion, because people think as soon as they're in an anti-MLM space, I think there's a stigma with anti-MLM that we're haters, that we're mean, that we'll shame people. And that is not what I'm about, because that is not what somebody needs when they're coming out. Because MLM is like trauma. It's trauma. And I really have started to look into that. And I'm like, it is traumatic.
It really is. And it's different than other trauma. But what I wanted to say before I get onto that was just that I wanted to speak to being a hater. And I really think it was Megan Williams that said this to me, and another fellow therapist.
Yes,
she's so great. I feel like I shout out Megan Williams a lot lately. I really like her.
She's got a book. I'm going to buy it.
Yes, it's so good. Everyone buy Megan's workbook. Yes. Cutting ties after MLM. Anyways, so she was saying, yeah, I am a hater. I hate that there's a system out there designed to manipulate people. I hate that people think that this is a way that they can make money, when it's really a way that they're losing money. I hate that people are treating each other this way. Like, those are the things I hate about this system. And I really liked it.
You know what? That's true, right? Like, that's the thing, is there's no specific hate, no specific individual. It's the system. It's the cult. It's a commercial cult.
Right.
Any MLM is a commercial cult, and you don't realize it. And that's the cult tactic. Oh my good Lord. They are strong. And I've been talking to people that are highly credentialed. Like, I talked to a pediatrician who was in Beachbody, and we had a lot. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. I'm educated. I joined an MLM, but holy crap, a pediatrician. You're a specialist doctor and you were in with this stuff. So it can get anybody.
It really can.
It's not just single moms. It's not just military wives. It's not just the people who typically join. Like, it gets everybody.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's something, like, there's a lot of stigma around being in an MLM. Mm-hmm. And especially once you're getting out, you realize like we kind of almost create a stigma. Mm-hmm. Because we're like, everyone must think that we're stupid. Like, we all like kind of have this dialogue, right? Of like, I'm not worthy. Like, I did something wrong. Like, oh my gosh, I was a bad person. Like, all of that starts to come up. Or, oh my gosh, you know, when you first started and you're like, oh, well, I don't want to do that because I don't know what people are thinking of me, or like, I don't want to be annoying. And it's like, oh my God, that was me. All of the reasons why I was hesitant to join are exactly what happened. And it just feels so yucky.
There's a real shame. There's a real shame, I think. And actually the funny thing is I don't feel embarrassed. There's so many people like, I'm so embarrassed. I'm like, you know, I'm not even at that place. I don't think I will be. I'm a super authentic person. And the reason I'm not embarrassed is because I thought that made sense when I was in it. So how can I be embarrassed? Like, that felt authentic at the time. I was in so deep that I thought that was the authentic me. So how can I be embarrassed? I was manipulated.
Right, exactly.
I was brainwashed. How can I be embarrassed of that? The cult actually got me.
Right, exactly. And that's a really good point, because actually I was just interviewed for Megan's podcast, The Authenticity Experience. Experiment. And I was actually talking about how I felt like I first started to find my authentic self while I was in an MLM, because it was the first time that I ever was like doing this thing. And I felt like it was like all me all the time. Like I had control, I had power, all of those things that you think you have, but you actually don't. So it's so interesting to think about, because in some ways it like it's undoing the work that I did in my earlier years when I thought that I was being an authentic self, whatever. But in other ways, it's empowering me to realize that I am even more my authentic self now, because I'm out and I'm still the strong woman that I made myself when I started MLM.
Oh yeah. But now you see both sides. So you're stronger. I like stronger. Cause I kind of think of it like an analogy. Like when you're in an MLM, it's like you're in a room and the lights are just turned off and you're in the dark, but you don't know you're in the dark.
Right. Cause your eyes.
And all of a sudden somebody switches on the light and you're like, oh, there's another way.
Yeah. And your eyes hurt at first when you turn on the light. Cause you're not.
Oh yeah. You don't want to see the light. Because you're like, that can't be true. This one isn't a pyramid scheme. No, the people who got in early aren't the ones who were rich. No. Oh, don't get me started on all that.
Yes. All right. I think that we need a pivot. How did you get into your MLM? What got you there?
Okay. So what happened is I'm an educated woman like yourself, and I've done a lot in my life. Like I've traveled, I've been to 26 countries. Like I've done a lot. I worked I can't say corporate America because I'm Canadian, corporate Canada doesn't have the same ring to it, but I worked in a large franchise business and I had like climbed up in that and broke records, and I'm a record breaker. I'm a performer. Right. And so we can get into kind of the mental health side of that, how it's really kind of detrimental sometimes. And so I was at a point in my life where I was working at the community college. I was an academic advisor. I was working as a counselor. I was just finishing up my master's degree. And so I took leave. In Canada, we get a really beautiful maternity leave and you get lots of benefits, which is great. But the other thing about me being an achiever is it's hard to slow down. And so, you know, the mental health side of that, it's hard to slow down. And you know, for a while, you're completely consumed with newborns. I had 3 babies within 4 years. So it was like, boom, 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 right? So what happened after I had my second baby is I was like, okay, I'm feeling antsy. I'm feeling like I want to do something. I'm feeling like, and so what happened was I was connected with my old friend on social media, and I just had known her for, at that point, like 15, 16 years, and loved her. I have no ill feeling towards my upline. I love her. Like she has a place in my heart. And that's a rare thing to be able to say. I know there's so much hate towards uplines, but my upline is a beautiful person.
Is your upline still in right now?
He is. Oh yeah. He is. Okay. Yeah. And it's okay. Like I'm okay with it. I don't have any negative feelings because I know what she's doing is she's just serving people. She's not really building her team anymore. And she's serving people who need her and reach out. So it's kind of like, I'm just like, yeah, that's cool. It's fine. I don't really have any weirdness about it. But when I joined her, she was in a really different place. Like she was building heavily and she was like a really high up coach and was like really had reached a rank. She was in the top 200. And so what I joined was very different than what it became. So the experience really changed. And so when I joined her, she was at the height of her Beachbody experience, like big earner. And I was like, okay, because we had worked together and I had actually outperformed her in our corporate role. So I obviously saw what she was doing as she had little kids too, and she was climbing and I always loved her. And I still think she's wonderful. And so I watched her and I was like, well, geez, if she can do that and I outperformed her in my corporate role, I can do that too. And so, you know, it didn't take much talking with her, and I'm a real researcher, and I was like, well, geez, if she's doing it, then obviously I can do it. Like, what questions do I really have? And all the, and I did my research, and I was like, well, if other people have failed at MLM and she's doing it, well, no, it's got to be okay. And so then I joined and I hit the ground running, and like, I was a performer. Like, I hit the targets every month. I grew my team. I walked the stage at Summit. So yeah, that was how it was for 6 years, and we were tight, and I did everything. Like, I hustled, girl.
Wow. That's, so what was that like walking the stage and like doing all that stuff? I mean, we just had Summit happen. Unfortunately, quite another super spreader, I think, happening right now. We're seeing all of these people come back home and post about how they have COVID, and it's really sad. I'm also seeing like the Arbonne event just happened, and they're all coming home and having COVID and getting their kids sick. And I'm like, this is just so sad. Yeah. But anyways, that's a little bit of a tangent, but tell us about your experience at Summit.
Okay. So in my 6 years as a coach, I went to 3 summits. I never went to the last 2 years, obviously because of COVID. And I was fine with it anyway. It's like, I'm sick of spending money and traveling and being away from my family. So that's another story. But anyway, so what was Summit like for me? My final Summit was when I really thought I was the cat's pajamas. I really did. Because you had to rank up to a certain level to get in with the top people in the top room. You had to be 2-star and above and like achieve all these things. And I did, because I was like, there's no way I'm going to Summit. There's no way I'm taking time out for my family and money and all of that stuff and not being in that top room. So I did what it took. And I swear to God, I sold my soul to the devil to get there. I really did. Some of the ugly stuff I did, but that's a probably another story. But how it felt when I was there is I honestly thought I had arrived, so to speak. I really did. Nobody can see my air quotes. I thought I had, because I was like, okay, I'm walking the stage. I'm being recognized. And I had my phone in my hand and I recorded. And actually I put that on my Instagram. I created a reel of what my footage I took as I crossed the stage, and how there was a stadium of 20,000 people. And I got to be part of the line of people that crossed the stage and shook the CEO's hand. I thought I had arrived. I was like, well, this is the beginning of when my business is going to explode. And I was on such a high. It almost felt like, in mental health terms, almost like mania, really. If I think about it, it's almost like mania. Like, you go to this thing and you're so full of yourself and you're so high and you're so overconfident and you don't sleep. It's like being extremely caffeinated and you don't sleep and you talk to a million people and you think you've arrived, and now it's like, okay, ready. And you get so full of yourself and you post this kind of stuff like, who's ready to join my team? You're going to get a direct message from me. Like, it's arrogance, really, right? And so that's what that experience was like. And then I came home from that and I hit a low. I was like, holy crap, I'm burnt out. Because what it took to get in that place, to be in that top room, to walk that stage, I crashed. So it was like the bottom. It was like a bipolar cycle, right?
It's like a forced mania and a forced like depression almost after, like, yeah. Or like a triggered depression after, because I remember that too. Like, I think that's very comparable. I think that a lot of people that go to the conventions, whatever they're called, Summit Convention, Empower, whatever, whatever you want to call it, there's so much energy in these rooms. I would even argue to say that even if you're somebody that doesn't really like feed off of other people's energy typically, I think that it would change in this environment, because you walk in and like, it's like a sensory overload. All of the colors and the lights and the music, and everyone's happy and crying. Everyone's crying. Why is everyone crying? God,
tears. I cried too. And then I wore my friggin' medal around my neck like I just won the Olympics.
Yep. Yeah. It's like, it's so contagious, and the energy is up, up, up. And you're right. You're not sleeping. A lot of people are flying in across the country, so their sleep schedules are changing.
Oh.
So that starts with the sleep deprivation, but then also, you know, you have your own team who is potentially organizing events on the side.
Oh yeah, all that. Yeah, and we had all that stuff, and it was like same thing. And then we're all meeting for morning workout. I'm on the West Coast, and so for me everything was East Coast time. So this 6 a.m. like street workout was 3 a.m. for me. At least for me, I was smart enough to know I'm a super introverted person. I do get some energy from people, but I have that awareness. And so I booked my own room because I knew I needed decompression time. But what you say about overstimulation is a huge one for me, because I get really overstimulated. I get overstimulated in groups of people. I get overstimulated when a TV is on and people are talking, like at the same, like an overstimulation of, like, I call it noise pollution. I have to leave the room and I have to decompress because I get like that. And so Summit for me is like 3-4 days of overstimulation, and it exhausts. And then you come home and your brain is so hyped up from everything that's put in there. It's just hype. It's nothing, like not much training. It's just hype.
Yeah.
And then you feel like you're supposed to apply it all, but you're exhausted.
But also you're like, I need to apply all of this. And then you're sitting there going, apply what?
Yeah. And your head is spinning because you're just like, okay, remember what this person said. And so I had this policy when I went through my last year, don't take a single note. Because really? what you need to remember, you'll remember. And what a waste. Like, it cost me $2,000 to go to that thing. The ticket, the flight, everything, hotel, eating out. And I was frugal about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so expensive. Oh. Like, I spent so much. I have no idea how I spent so much money. And I talk about this all the time on here. But, like, I can't bring myself to go back and look at my bank records because I'm like, I can't. I'm just kidding.
I was actually profitable being in for 6 years with my earnings and stuff. And my husband's a financial professional. He's in that world for like 20 years. So it's, you know, we always knew I was always profitable and I was always super careful about that. But that's not why I left. It has nothing to do with whether or not I was profitable. I just couldn't be part of something where the majority of people who join lose.
Right.
I was done with that. And I had a message on my Instagram. And it was a coach who's in deep, and she's been in for 12 years. And again, I don't shame. I don't say anything unkind. And just saying how hard it was to watch me just be completely the opposite after 6 years. And I had to explain to her that it was a process. It wasn't overnight. It wasn't one event. It was a series of things. And it was me going, I'm going to open this other area of my brain now and accept that there could be something other than this MLM thing. And she had a hard time seeing that I wasn't into it anymore. And I make fun of myself and I parody all my own content because it's fun. It's therapeutic for me to do that. I forget where I was going. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that there's really something there. And because you're like so hyped up, I really want to kind of talk about that transition from like being in this like super overstimulating rah-rah environment to going home. Mm. And I remember being like kind of agitated when I went home. Did you remember that? Because also like nobody else had that rah-rah anymore. And everyone, I mean, I live in New England, so everyone's a little grumpy. sometimes, especially if they don't have coffee yet, they're all Dunkiners. But you know, so I come home and everyone's like, they're normal. And I'm like, why isn't anyone excited anymore?
Cause they're not at the cult convention. That's why.
Right.
And I remember always after Summit, like results were always, and they always did it right around a program launch. Like the program would launch like the Monday after. And so you would go home and you would like, I was a big point earner too. Like I got the points. I always got the customers. That was never an issue for me. So yeah, I remember feeling agitated, but actually Danielle, I had this moment, and this is my final Summit where things got really pumped up, and going home, and I had the day planner, and my husband really noticed my energy. He's pretty in tune with me. And you know, he's been with me through, you know, me going through some mental health stuff. And so came and he looked at my planner and he looked at the words that I wrote off on the page the week after Summit, the couple weeks, the month after. And on my planner, I'm not going to swear so you don't have to mark this episode with a little E. I said, just effing survive. That was what I wrote on my planner. And he was like, whoa, Michelle. I was like, yeah, that's how I feel. I just hustled for like 3 months to get in the place to go to Summit. And I'm now exhausted and I'm now burnt out. And this is 3 years before I quit. So this is 3 years in where I still had mega goals. And I'd been to another thing that year that was put on by Beachbody that was called the NLC, the New Leaders Conference. And so I'd rank advanced a couple times that year and rank advanced, and I was in it. And I wrote that on my planner, and it was so hard for me to even understand what was going on. Like, I'm aware of emotional roller coasters you go through with things. I have that awareness. And so what I did at that point, I just shudder at this. There is a, I'm not going to name names. I know we talked about that. I'm not going to name names. It's a guru within Beachbody. It's a male. And people join him. You can message me after and I'll tell you his name in a private message. And he runs a lot of stuff for people to rank advance. He runs like a coach academy. Anybody who's listening in Beachbody, you're laughing. You know who I'm talking about. And I was already on his email list because I listened to his podcast. It's intense. And I have a really intense energy too. Like, I'm an intense goal getter and I love the swearing and I get into that, right? It's just so to my own detriment to my mental health, right? So unbalanced. And so I got this email because I was on his email list. No, that's not who it is, Danielle. And I got this email because I was on his email list and it said, in the subject line, elite guaranteed. And that is what I wanted. I wanted elite because I had just gone 2-star diamond and I wanted to go 5-star and I wanted to have the team. And that was always my goal. And so I signed up for his course and paid $4,000. And I saw it as a business investment. I had the money. It was fine. Was it worth it? I don't know. I don't think so. No, because what I did was I put my child, my youngest, who was a year and a half, my third child, I put him in extra daycare. So I spent money on that. I hired a cleaner, so I didn't have to do that. So I started outsourcing things. And so it was really more than the $4,000 cost, right? And I didn't hit elite. I hit premier, which I was dang proud of at the time.
Is that above or below?
So premier is below elite, but it's like the next step down. If we were live, people could see the video, I could show you my little things. We're going to go in the garbage later, but first I have to do a reel to make fun of my little crystal plaques I got. All this old stuff I have, I'm like, I can make great reels now. So I did that and oh God, it just twisted my mind, you know, and it made it harder to let go. I don't know what your original question was, but that was kind of my segue from there.
I don't remember what it was either. But yeah, I mean, it's just those coaching programs. I mean, the episode that actually just dropped today, it was Julie Anderson's episode, and she talks about her like experience through all of these coaching programs, and it was just so intense. So I definitely, if anyone is jumping around, I definitely encourage you to go back to listen to that, because these coaching programs are just as bad, if not worse, than the MLM companies themselves.
It was basically the same thing we're taught within Beachbody. It's called the business activity tracker. Mm-hmm. So you can hit the monthly quotas called Success Club. And it was basically that just 10x. Yeah. It was just like, woo, let's turn up the volume. So I'm like, okay, I can respond to that. I can work harder.
Right.
Right. And then you're on the sheet and you're tracked. And if you don't put your numbers in, you're out of the group. And so it was like, well, I can respond to that. You can be militant with me. I'm a hard ass. I'm good with that. And so then I carried that down my own downline and my uplines team. And I kind of partnered on something and just was like, let's get harsh with people.
Yeah.
Like it was, yeah.
How often would you say you were working? Like, what was like the hours that you were working?
On average, probably 20 hours a week. I'd say on average, there were times when I would do a lot more than that. I'm a real smart worker though. Like when I work, I get results. I wasn't the kind of person who would spend, I never even had an IG account really to build my business. I did everything on Facebook. So, you know, I had a private group where I just built value and stuff with 10,000 people in it. I had a like page on Facebook with 10,000 likes. I had 5,000 friends. So I had more than enough. I was good. I never even had an IG account. I didn't spend any time creating reels. I didn't do any of that. I was really good at finding people and keeping them. I had people like continue with me the whole time I was there. People, I had a really loyal, beautiful customer base, really. Like I had great customers and I served them well and resold to them a lot. And I'm not, I don't feel cringy about that because I served them well and I did a really good accountability group and I was really good at messages. What killed me in MLM, if you really want to get the nitty gritty of it, what killed me is that I could never shut it off because I'm a high performer and I pride myself on customer service. Like I serve my people, man. Like I would go to the grave with that. And so that's what really killed me. What really made me go, I can never shut this off. I want to spend time with my family. I'm sick of messages. Go away.
Yeah. I think that's something that is really, really hard, especially the more and more technology just seeps into our lives, the harder it is to shut off. And then when you're in these commercial cults where you're told that you need to create urgency, what's actually happening is they're creating urgency within you. So that way you feel like, oh my God, they messaged me back. I need to respond. Oh my God, they're doing this. I need to respond. I need to hurry up. I need to hurry up. I need to hurry up. While you're supposed to be like creating urgency for the customer base, but you're the customer. So they're creating urgency in you.
And your numbers reset every month.
Oh, that is one of the things that just drives me absolutely crazy because you... Or I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that word. That just makes me so upset because it's just, I don't even know. It's so frustrating to work so hard, work so hard, work so hard, and then to see it go back down to nothing. And then to have to do it again.
And so how I always did it is I front loaded it. In my first week of the month, I'd be like, okay, we're getting Success Club in the bag. There's no way I'm missing this. Because in my 6 years, I was with Beachbody, I hit Success Club 70 months. Like that's like not common. Like I was like, there's no way I'm missing this stuff. And I had my last 5 years, I hit it every month. Like I never missed for 60 months. Like only in my first year did I miss a couple times. Like I'm playing, man. Like I'm not hitting goals. Like I have a super high attainment. Like super high. Like there's a goal. Nobody needs to pressure me. I got it all in there myself. And it resets every month. So, you know, you have this huge record breaking month and the next month you wake up, it's at zero. So your first day of the month, you're like, let's go, let's go. So if you plan a family holiday at the beginning of the month, if you're like me, where you like to front load it and hit your goals, you come back and you're like, holy crap, it's the middle of the month. I better hustle as soon as I come home. So the whole time you're on a holiday, you're thinking about how, well, I can't miss my goals. I have 6 years in a row of like these records, right? So the deeper you get, the harder it is. It doesn't get easier as longer you're in it. It's worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And it's just so like, you know, they build you up, they build you up, they build you up, they knock you down. They build you up, they build you up, they build you up, they knock you down. And then like, you have to like try to keep hitting the same rank over and over again. And it's just so hard.
It is hard. Rank advancing in MLM is seriously like I used to work 80 hours in my corporate role, like 80 hours a week, and hit huge numbers, like huge numbers. I was in my early 20s and I broke records. Like that was hard stuff. I kid you not, my time in MLM was harder. Yeah. Stuff to accomplish in MLM is harder than my time when I was in the corporate world. Seriously, and I busted my butt. I recruited. I used to recruit. I used to train. Like I did so much. I trained in sales, for goodness sake. I'm certified in selling. And I found MLM, sales and recruiting, harder than my corporate role where I worked 80 hours a week. It was mentally, okay, I told you I worked 20 hours a week. My mind was probably on it, for 168 hours a week, you know, the hours in a week. I dreamt about it. I thought about it in the shower.
Yeah. It doesn't turn off. It doesn't turn off at all, because they want you to take, like, they want you to merge your regular life with your work life. Like, the whole concept of work-life balance is completely thrown out the door when you join an MLM. And those habits are extremely hard to break once you leave. And I know that firsthand, because I work all the time and I am constantly having to remind myself to slow down.
This is a real process. And it's actually interesting you say that, because anybody who's an MLM and wants to leave, I would suggest a slow unshackling, like I did. So it was not quick. My deliberate actions started 6 months before I let go, and I slowly did it. So I realized after a year, when there was, I was 5 years in and I had a year left, something was off. I could never quite pinpoint it until about, I had 6 months left. And then I was like, okay, I need to start changing how I do this. So I stopped posting every day. I deleted a bunch of connections on my Facebook. I went from 5,000 friends to 500. Like, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I don't know you. I don't want you in my life. I stopped posting to stories over time. I stopped doing anything like that. And I slowly did it. I slowly unshackled myself. And then it was like, okay, now I'm ready. Now I'm ready. Now I can do this. It was a slow process of shedding and letting go, because it was a lot of building. And as pulling the plug, that I couldn't have done that. It would be weird. Like, I had to let my customers know in a way, and kind of pass it off to my upline. And it was a way that was like, oh, okay, I can do this. Because pulling the plug after 6 years, oh my God, that'd be weird.
Yeah, I think especially for people who are actually making money, like, you know, once you get up to that, like, top 3%, it's a little bit of a different situation than it is for somebody at the bottom. But no matter what, I think, you know, just taking the time and backing off, take 2 weeks off, do a profit and loss statement. Like, that 2 weeks away, it gives you some time away from the cult members. Or your team members, if you're still in, to just kind of reset and just kind of see, like, how many of my values actually align with what they're saying. And okay, so the words match, but the actions don't match. Like, so say they're saying, like, oh yeah, like, I'm doing this so I can spend time with my family and I can rest and I can go to the beach and I can do all these things. All of those words line up with what I want, but the actions behind them are not.
So that actually, that's a beautiful thing you just said, because what I realized is a thing called cognitive dissonance. You're like, yeah, I see you nodding. Cognitive dissonance. This is the thing. This is psychology speak, but let's put it in just regular terms. Because the terminology sometimes is like, what? Even cognitive dissonance to me doesn't really hit home. It's when your actions and your values are not aligned. So it's like, imagine you're standing with your foot in two boats, but they're going different ways. And you're like, ah! So it's like when your values and your actions are not the same. And so that's a real issue in MLM, where you're like, I don't want to be icky and cringy and post the stuff, but I need to do it to grow my business. I don't want to treat people like a sales quota, but I need to, because I need customers. I don't want to recruit because I believe everybody who joins will fail, which they friggin' do. 99% quit, lose money, fail, back off. Trust me, I get the recruiting. And so you're like, but I have to grow this business. And then it gets to a point where you're like, I can't do this anymore. It's so strong, my feelings inside, of knowing this is wrong and then trying to continue with the actions. There's only so long I can force myself to do that before I feel physical pain in my body.
I really liked what you said about describing cognitive dissonance as your feet in two boats. Like, that totally clicked for me. Mm-hmm. Or even, actually, I would even change it just a little bit to 1 foot on a boat and 1 foot on the dock. And the dock is the solid, like,
your values,
the ones that actually align with you and the ones that are real and true. And then the boat is the MLM.
Oh my God. Yes. The boat is the MLM telling you all this stuff that you know in your gut is wrong, but you do it anyway.
And you know what? The boat is nice at first, right? It's so nice. You get to go through, you see the sunset, but eventually the only thing you have is fish and salt water. And you unfortunately can't really survive forever on fish and salt water.
Good analogy.
Yeah.
So that feeling is what I felt that day when I slammed my laptop closed and I said, I effing hate this, to my husband. And I felt like I could not quit. I was like, I can't. I had 1,277 customers, Danielle.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot, because Beachbody has this program, and I'll tell you about something that's really, really terrible. They have this program where you hit Success Club and you're an Emerald Coach, which means you, and then there's one under you on each leg, and you hit Success Club, which is their minimum sales quota every month, which isn't that hard to hit. Honestly, once you're in it for a while, it just becomes like so easy, right? Like for me, it was easy. There wasn't a challenge in it anymore because I had such a big customer base. They assign leads to you. So when people join Team Beachbody on their website and just they don't go via a coach, they just get, because Beachbody market, right? They get leads. Beachbody gets leads. They assign them to their coaches who do these minimum targets, right? And so I was always getting leads for Beachbody, and those people eventually buy things and then you get the commission from them for doing nothing, right? Except being a performing coach, which I don't think is that bad of a system really for somebody like myself who actually reached out to those people and was like, hey, join my group. Like, I'll help you, message me anytime. I was available. I served people well. I'm proud of that. What they did the month before I quit is they pulled that.
Really?
And they made it so you had to be a lifetime diamond coach that previous month. So I won't even get into all that. It's complicated. But you had to achieve a target, which was much harder. You had to have an active Beachbody, a BOD group, which coaches don't love those things. And there was some other stuff that was just like, oh, and now the leads, when they joined Team Beachbody, they had to opt in to having a coach. Which nobody's going to do that.
Right.
Nobody's going to do that. I don't need a coach. I don't want someone bugging me trying to sell me stuff.
Yeah, I know.
That lead program is basically like nobody's going to get those leads. And that was a source of income for me.
I think that they, part of the reason they probably did that, because I know a lot of people, the Beachbody workout system, when it comes down to it, that's one of the more affordable. The $99, that's one of the more affordable MLM products out there. It is affordable.
It's affordable, definitely.
I have a lot of, married to my husband, I have a lot of issues with the current workouts that they have, but affordable, easy access to workouts, whatever. So we'll call it what it is. It's a mediocre workout program that's affordable. So. Mm-hmm.
The old school stuff is way better.
Yeah, that's what you were saying. I like the new and shiny things. Like, I like it to look nice and
trust me, I'm tempted to buy new stuff. I'm like, that program looks so good. I'm like, I ain't giving MLM any money.
Right, exactly. So I lost my train of thought. So people will quit because they don't want to be part of the MLM, and then they'll go and sign up through just like Beachbody on demand, and then they get emailed by these coaches and they're like, damn it, I thought I left this stupid scheme.
Yeah, so Beachbody has made that optional. So it's the reason they've done that, obviously, Danielle, is I don't know if you are aware, but when they launched their IPO and went public last June, their stock at the peak was at $12 per share, and it's now at like $1.30. So they have epically tanked. And so OpenFit just merged with Beachbody on July 11th, so like a week ago. And so there's two platforms now together. And so BOD has now gone up in price. So there's some changes that have happened, but something that obviously Carl, the CEO of Beachbody, is getting hammered by his board of directors. I have a finance husband, so I can talk about this stuff a little more fluently. He's trying to retain more money from the company instead of paying it out to coaches, because there's founding coaches that get paid millions and do nothing. And so by making it so you have to achieve bigger things in order to get the perks, makes it so the company retains more money. And so the stock value will go up. And so I get it. Like, logically, I'm like, of course you're scared. Your stock value is like 10% of what it used to be. Well, so you need to recover from that.
Yeah, well, I think that they probably did so well. I mean, Beachbody probably had it made during the pandemic. Out of any of the multi-level marketing companies, Beachbody was I would love to see everyone on a graph. I bet you Beachbody was the most successful because everyone couldn't go to the gym.
Let me tell you what happened during
the pandemic. They lost their job, and then they couldn't work out. So, boom, boom.
Let me tell you straight from the horse's mouth what happened. I remember people, my downline and coaches that I worked with, like, oh my God, this is horrible. I'm like, you don't see the opportunity. Are you nuts? Let's go, girls. Like, I was so excited. And so for me, I honestly have to say my business went grew like crazy during that time. And so every month, the coach, you get these leads assigned to you, as we just talked about. And so in a month, I would maybe get one a week. So if, you know, 4 to 6 leads a month during the pandemic, I would get multiple a day.
Wow.
Multiple a day. So I was saying to my downline, I'm like, hit Success Club, do it, because the leads are pouring in. And so I would get these leads and like, oh my God. So with Beachbody, we didn't get commission on their first order, but the beautiful thing is when you join up, I'm saying this as if I'm still a coach, the beautiful thing for coaches is when a lead joins and then their bought subscription renews, you get renewal commission on that.
Right.
When it renews in 3 months or 6 months or a year, you get commission. So honestly, Danielle, when I quit, I had pages of bought subscriptions. I could have just sat back and collected a check, honestly. Yeah. And I was at a point where I was working my business an hour a week because I couldn't handle it anymore. And I was like, I can't do this ethically. I can't serve people this way. I hate what I'm doing. I hate this. I have no passion for this anymore. And I don't believe in it. This is gross. I couldn't just sit and collect back. I don't know how those founding coaches do it. I really don't know how they look themselves in the mirror.
Yeah. That's so interesting. And like that's like what you're describing sounds so great, right? Like, I mean, obviously once you take out the icky parts that we all know about, but like, it sounds so nice. Like, okay, so if you hit Success Club, then you're going to get all these leads. And like, that's the part that nobody wants to do, right? Nobody wants to go and cold message people. Nobody wants, like, so you're getting somebody that's already shown interest in the product. You don't even have to prospect them.
Yep.
And they're already customers. You just have to keep grooming them, essentially.
Because those leads, usually when you emailed them, would never message back. I would email them. I would usually never hear back from them. It was just like, oh, great. Thanks for signing up. I'll collect commission when your bot subscription renews. Great. Cool. Thanks. Next.
Yeah.
I had so much of that. It was just sitting there. Like, I was like, beauty. I would get money just coming in all the time.
Wow. That's true too. I mean, you're right. Cause I mean, bare minimum, they're using the workout subscription.
Yeah. Yeah. And like at that point I was like, great. I just need Beachbody leads. And so that's kind of what kept me around a little longer. I was like, I'll just hit Success Club. I'll just do the bare minimum. I'll serve my people well. Cause that I'm not going to drop you as my customer. I'm going to serve you well. And so all I did was just serve my customers, answer message, run a group where I just kind of had bought the posts and put them there. And I was like, I'll just hit Success Club and I'll get leads. My income will just grow from doing a little bit. Which I didn't feel bad about that. I was like, you know, I'm not doing anything anymore. I had stopped recruiting. I served people who already purchased. And that was it, right? But it was like, man, this company is just doing some stuff I don't like anymore. I don't like the new programs. And I cannot recruit. I ethically cannot recruit anymore. I do not believe new coaches can succeed. I really don't.
Yeah, no, it's really just designed for us to fail, as we say all of the time. Like, how are you supposed to succeed in recruiting people who already know about, like, so many more people are waking up and realizing that these things are scams.
Yeah.
And also just like so many people are already in MLMs now too. Like, where is the market for a new coach to really get somebody new? Unless you're like, okay, well, like let me recruit you into doing Beachbody and then I'll buy your soap. or something. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, you're doing
You know, and so for me, that's what I was finding. I was really finding that saturation point. That was kind of my biggest objection before I joined. It's kind of saturated, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't listen to that gut instinct, and I proved it to myself after 6 years because, you know, like I said, I had a value-added group with 10,000 people in it. It wasn't a Beachbody group. It was just my group where I was like sharing mental health tips, sharing recipes. Like, I was proud of it. It was a cool little group, well engaged. I built it over 3 years. 10,000 people is not anything to shake a stick at. There's quite a few people in there. And not only that, I had email addresses, so I had an email list too. And so it was getting to the point where I would post, you know, somebody wanting a free workout or the sample workouts that they would launch. And pretty much everybody already had tried Beachbody before. I was finding that I just couldn't find people. It was just becoming where, wow, everybody's heard of this, tried this. So I was like, wow. Like, so now all I'm going to be doing is trying to bust down barriers to get them to either join me or try to believe that it works.
Yeah.
And so I was really feeling that saturation point. And I was like, okay, so that is why Beachbody's launching into other countries, because we need a more demographic market because we're tapped.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So do you want to kind of dive into your like mental health story that coincides with Beachbody?
Sure. Absolutely. So why don't you maybe start me off with a question so you can direct me?
You have like a mental health history that you had before Beachbody started that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'm very open about it because I've posted all about it on my social. I mean, I'm going to share it on my Instagram eventually too, how I did. I've been so open about it. Like, it's out there. I got nothing to hide. So mental health is something that runs in my family. So, you know, there's depression and anxiety in my family and it goes far back. So like, it's so there, but you know, I recognized as a I felt off, but I never really knew it. And I'm such a headstrong person that I was just like, just go, just plow forward, just bulldoze, don't feel your feelings, like, just go, just accomplish stuff, you'll feel good. And I'm a high achiever. And so my life kind of, I lived in Europe for 3 years with my husband. We came back and I kind of crashed one day, for lack of a better term, where I literally did crash my car into a cement pole. Like, I sideswiped it. Like, fine, everything was fine. The car wasn't in good shape, but everything was fine. And I basically had a meltdown at the job that I had at the time. And had to go to a walk-in clinic that night. I literally felt like I was becoming unhinged. Like, I was like, I'm just gonna snap. Like, everything, I became oversensitive to any noise, any voice, anything. Like, I felt so like I was going to explode. I don't know how to even describe the feeling. It was awful. I couldn't tolerate anything. I could tolerate nothing. I couldn't even handle somebody talking to me. And so I basically describe it as a nervous breakdown. And my husband took me to a walk-in clinic that night. And that was in 2011. So I've been on antidepressants since then, the same one since then. So I've never taken a break. I've always been on it. So I had to start with a major anti-anxiety medication just because I needed to calm the heck down. it was something strong, but it was like, yahoo, yay, I can lay here and feel good. It was great. I think it was called clonazepam. I think it was called that. It was a while ago. It was a strong one anyway. And then I started an antidepressant, and I was lucky to get on the right one right away, because as you know, as a therapist, anxiety and depression are comorbid, so they often exist together. The strongest for me was anxiety. Like, I really struggled. I got diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. There was phobias in there as well that were quite debilitating. Like, I had specific phobia. I still can't even talk about it because I don't want to think about it. I had a specific phobia to specific creature that a lot of people were scared of, and I would lay in bed and I would think about it, and it would get catastrophic really fast, and I would get a racing heart. And so it was the doctor that I went to, my general practitioner, was a man that was just fantastic. Like, fantastic. I was so lucky that he listened, and my husband came with me, and he diagnosed me, and he was just a wonderful man. And so that was my experience. And so I have been on an antidepressant since then. And you know, my dosage has changed over the years. And, you know, when I had babies, my OBGYN, he like doubled my dosage. And I've actually tapered myself off it. I'm on such a small amount now. It's pretty much a placebo. So, yeah, so that's kind of my experience. I'm very open about it. It's the chemistry in my brain. My chemistry in my brain is not normal, for lack of a better term. And so that's why I've needed medication. So I don't like the stigma around it. I'm like, I can't help it. This is how my brain is.
Yeah. So as you started to become immersed in multi-level marketing culture and Beachbody culture, specifically, what did you notice? I'm assuming you noticed some good things happen because you were exercising regularly.
But yeah, what else
happened on your journey?
Okay, so let's talk about some of the good things first. So I actually, as a lot of coaches do, started with the workouts and then went, ooh, there's this whole coaching thing. And so I had gotten great results with the workouts and had a two-year-old and a six-month-old at home, which is mental in itself, and lack of better term, is the stigma around that word. And so, you know, I was feeling good and I lost a lot of weight and I was in wicked shape and I felt so good. And so, you know, what it did is it created these fantastic habits for me around exercising. And still to this day, I've worked out 6 days this week, not because I have to, because I want to, because I love it. I have a home gym and I work out and I love it. Like, I love it. I go down there and I lift weights and I feel great. And it's a habit that has been going for 6.5 years. And I'm proud of that. And I think that's one really, really fantastic thing, because I'm not all OB bodies terrible. There's some things about it that are really good. Exercise habits. You have to be careful though and take that with a grain of salt, because a lot of the eating programs really can trigger disordered eating habits. But again, okay, you want to say something, go right ahead.
Yeah. Also, I just always like to throw in there too that like the amount of exercise that they are prescribing in these workouts per week is way more than most people need, unless you're like a professional athlete maybe. But I mean, you need time to have your muscles repair. So please don't work out 7 days a week. Like, you need
to have rest. Thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that. And actually, because I have my personal training cert, I'm aware of that too. And I'm like, okay, so, you know, like I follow more of the older programs now where they have the rest days and they alternate with body parts you're using and
right.
High impact, because I got injured too. Injured myself too. I really did. I sprained my ankle and then I had shoulder impingement and I had an issue with my knee from high impact. So I'm way more careful about that now. And with my personal trainer search, I love that you put that disclaimer in there. God, right. Listeners, be careful with that.
And like these programs, like there's one program that like specifically targets like your butt and stuff too. And like, it's almost all lower body, right? 80-day obsession. Mm. That's almost all lower body. Like, that's not good for your legs. You need time to rest. And I like to throw that in there every time because I know that I needed to hear it multiple times. So hopefully every time someone hears it, they're like, okay, Danielle, I'm listening. I hear you. I'm not going to do it.
Over-exercise actually does more damage than good. It stresses out your body.
Yeah. And it's not like, there's a way for you to get movement in every day to help your mental health. If that's what you're looking for, go for a walk. Like walks are valid forms of exercise. They're very important. They're very good for you. If you can get outside, that's amazing. You're getting a double whammy of getting like the nature plus the, you know, the movement, like it's all so good for you, but there are so many things that you can do that are not going to like stress out your entire body. It doesn't need to be a 2-hour walk. It can be a 10 or 15 minute walk.
Those walks are like, they feed your soul. Nature is so, so good. And it's funny because when I was going through the whole shedding my MLM, I had you and I had Roberta's podcast in my ear. Mm-hmm. It was like walking therapy. I was like, this is what I need. And I would be so emotional during those walks. Listening to some of it. Oh, so Yeah, you're so right about exercising, and you know, Beachbody has really lightened up a lot of their programs, and they have a lot less like high impact stuff. But the programs itself, I mean, oh God, they're so the same as every other program. Like they're
Yeah.
not different. They're just relaunching the same thing with a different trainer and a couple different moves, you know?
Right, exactly. Or they're creating new moves that like are maybe they're fun or sure, like maybe they are targeting some different things, but it just sometimes you're overcomplicating, like with
Oh God, Danielle.
these constant compound movements, like you're
Oh.
just limiting yourself, right? Because like if you can deadlift 100 pounds, we'll just say you can
Yeah.
deadlift 100 pounds, but then you're trying to press it too. Like, I'm sure some people are like deadlifting 100. I mean, I can deadlift more than 100 pounds, but like a lot of people can't. So, like, if you're deadlifting 100 pounds and then you're trying to press 100 pounds, those are two different muscles that you're trying to work, and it's different weights that you would need.
I can squat a lot more than I can curl, so let's not combine those moves with the same weight, thanks.
Right, exactly. Like, it's just. And then they're combining so much. Like there are compound moons that have like three or four different exercises all
Did
put
you ever do
together.
9-week Control Freak?
No, I left right
That
before
is the
the.
most complicated program I have ever tried in my life. It was so, I'm not even going to get into it because I don't want to give Autumn airtime. But it was, oh God, the moves were so complicated. I had to take a marker, a dry erase marker, and write on my wall mirror and like, write, okay, this one, then this one, then this one, then this one. Okay. And then how many sets do I get done? And it's like, God, I just want to turn my brain off and just move.
Right. It almost like takes away that fun part of working out. And I'm sure sometimes it's nice to have something a little bit more complicated to like challenge your brain. Go to a
Yeah.
dance class.
Read a book if you want to challenge
Yeah.
your brain. I'm not working out to challenge my brain. I'm working out to challenge my body or relax it or whatever my goal is for that day.
Yeah. Like there are other ways to like challenge your brain and get movement in. Like I was saying, like go to a dance class, go to a kickboxing class and like learn different punching combinations. Like
Yeah.
there are several different ways that you can accomplish getting a little bit more brain firing
Yeah.
if that's what you're looking for. If like
Yeah.
you feel like you need that, but you're right. Reading a book would also be great.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's other crossword. That's
Yeah.
super good for your brain. Or a Sudoku puzzle. It doesn't have to be like, okay, so this punch, then this move, then this squat, then this weight, then it's like, Jesus.
Yeah, it's exhausting. It's like way more exhausting than it should be. And just talking about it, I'm like, oh my God.
Well, honestly, you show up for your workout and you're frustrated because I would have to pause it to write it down. Like, okay, then this, and then I'd have to watch a demo, and then I'd have to do this, and then it's like, oh, can I just like seriously, let's just like build muscle in a non-complicated way. What's wrong with a curl?
Right, exactly. Squat, bench, deadlift for life.
Yeah, I know. After I got my personal training cert, I was like, man, those programs are they're just gimmicky. People buy it.
Yeah, so I'm curious, as you got your personal training cert, like what were some of the other things that you noticed that were just like super incons like or not right? What were some of the workout things that you noticed that weren't right that were kind of being like preached in these programs?
No, I found probably the biggest thing that I struggled with was not so much the workout as the nutrition programs. And I think that's where I think that's pretty much where all the flack comes for Beachbody is how it promotes these. It can promote disordered eating.
Absolutely.
Unless you have the awareness to go, whoa, I'm too obsessive. It can really promote eating disorders and some of the things. And I found when 2B Mindset launched, it was a bit of a breath of fresh air because it was less exact and it was more intuitive. I
Right.
found that was like, okay, that's kind of nice. And it was actually a registered dietitian, which I really respected that.
Yeah.
But the whole container thing, I found, even as somebody who I had a strong foundation in nutrition because I've always been interested in it. And I always kind of understood it. I found even for me, I was like, whoa, like this is really hard to plan around as a mom with three kids, and I'm the only vegetarian in my house. It was complicated. It became to the point where just meal planning, I was like, okay, I need like hours to just like figure it out. the beginning of the week. Like, that's just, who wants to do that? Can we just go to the burgers, please? And I'll have a salad.
Right. And it gets so, it turns into like, you either have to make it really, really complicated, or you have to eat the same thing over and over and over again.
Yep. Portion fix chili. And then I'll make it with Beyond Ground because we can all eat that. Or Shakeology for lunch because I can get my veggies and get everything in there and measure it out. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. I remember like when she like does those videos where she talks about how she made Portion Fix, and she talks about how like the salad can take, like, you know, you go to a pizza place and you get a salad and it's in that big container. And it's like really, like it could really easily be multiple servings of salad. Sure. But also, like, are you really shaming people for eating salad?
Yeah, I know. And also limiting the number of green containers you get. I mean, if you have a little bit of a background in nutrition, you know you can eat as many damn green vegetables as you want. And it's actually good for you.
Right.
So when I followed Portion Fix, I had the like little knowledge in my brain where I would go, no, Michelle, don't measure your veggies. Like, come on, just have more spinach, have more this, have more this. I never worried about it. But if people don't know that, they take her stuff as gospel and follow it.
Right. And then just like, okay, so like, I'm not eating a raw carrot by itself. Like, I need to dip it in something. And so like, then you're like, okay, well, like, it gets to this point where you're just like demonizing everything, because then you can only have so much of a dip with it, because, and it's like, okay, but if I am able to have more of this dip, I can have more of these vegetables. And I think I should have more of these vegetables over stressing about how much dip I'm using. Yeah. Like, I mean, like maybe not eating an entire container of dip to your face. Like, maybe, I don't know, like, if that's your journey for you, then I'm certainly not trying to shame you, but like, you should be able to eat as many carrots as you want. And if you need to put dip on your carrots to eat them, then do it.
It's better than not eating. Yeah. And well, and you're going to be full and satisfied when you have that anyhow.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So I actually have found the less I forbid things, and this is getting into intuitive eating, the less I forbid things, the less I actually crave them.
Yeah. And like, it's so hard because we live in this society that like demonizes so much food outside of Beachbody. So you get into Beachbody and you think you're doing this good thing because it's not on the surface. If you don't look into the plan as much as we know about it, like on the surface, it's like, okay, so I'm just gonna like, you know, this is just how I'm gonna like measure things without having to like be meticulous. Like you feel like you're not being meticulous about it. But then once you look at the plan and it starts categorizing foods,
God,
that's really dangerous. Like, it's okay to eat a potato.
I know. Well, and also, how do you deal with a dinner invite? Like, you're going to somebody's house and they're making mashed potatoes. And you're like, well, geez, I don't know how many teaspoons are in that, because did you add butter? And it gets excessive. Like, how do I go and enjoy a dinner at somebody's house because they choose to make, I don't know, chicken and meat and like corn and potatoes that are like all your yellow portions. So you're stressed about, well, I should save everything up throughout the day because I'm going to go out for this dinner. And just, it's not, you can't live life like that. Like, how do you go out for dinner? Like, not, I'm sorry, but pizza doesn't really work with Portion Fix. I'm having four pieces, thanks.
Yeah, I remember when I was doing that, I was scared of eating peas.
Oh, because they're a yellow. Because peas are a yellow. And it's like, no, peas are a veggie, but because they have so many carbs, they're a yellow. You can tell I knew this stuff really well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, most vegetables are carbs. Like, that, like,
I know.
Like, it just, you know, it's so interesting that we demonize carbs, but then praise vegetables, but they are carbs.
I know. And then Beachbody was also very anti like the ketogenic diet, right? But it's like, well, if you're following 2B mindset, you get a carb at breakfast and a little bit of carb at lunch and then none for the rest of the day, basically. It isn't keto because the veggies have carbs, but it's like, it's low carb.
Yeah.
And I was starving when I followed that. I'm like, I'm sorry, I lift weights. Give me some like potatoes and bread. I'm hungry.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to eat, especially if you're working out that much. You need to eat. It's just.
Yeah. And you know, I don't even think it's like, I'm just like, it's normal movement. I'm just so used to it. But I'm like, I want to eat food. I don't want to like think about it. I just want to eat. I'm hungry. Let's eat.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. I feel like we've bounced all over the place.
Yeah,
so is there any more to your story that you want to chat about?
There is so much I could say, in all honesty. I mean, it's still such a journey every day. Let it go. And I think that, you know, I'm so grateful for the anti-MLM community, in all honesty, because I feel like I have a true community, whereas in, you know, MLMs, you're sold this idea of a sisterhood and girlfriends. And I have to be honest, I didn't experience that much cattiness in my Beachbody experience. I'm super rare because my upline is a really nice person. And her team, as a result, were really nice people because you kind of attract who you are, right? And she was a genuine person. And so what's really sad is that people are sold this idea that they're going to get this sisterhood, this community, and all of this stuff with MLM. But it's really not. You're only part of the sisterhood when you're performing. And then you get a more elite sisterhood. And when you're purchasing, right? What sisterhood requires you to have business performance and purchase stuff in order to be part of it? And what sisterhood you join, does it benefit the other members of the sisterhood by you joining? And so, you know what really hit home for me?
Mm-hmm.
When it, so I'm in, I was, I should say, I'm not in, I'm, everything's gone. Like, I'm not in any of it anymore. Is in the group that I was in, so she would be like my great grandma coach. That was my upline and then her one above that. Right. So it's kind of like, I would kind of refer to it like my great grandma coach. Right. So, we all kind of joined into her team page because it was like my upline team page was kind of falling flat. And I kind of went, I'm not running any more team calls. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
I just can't volunteer anymore like this. And what really got me is the posts that would come up every week after our payday. So Beachbody's payday is on Thursdays. And the longer you had been a coach, the more you would get these team cycles. So, you know, it's based on volume of your team below you. And I found Beachbody's comp plan complicated. Once I understood it, I was like, oh, I know how to maximize this. So she would post things every week about how many team cycles she would get. And then the couple people below her, and she would get, on average in a week, like 200 team cycles, and those are $18 each.
Wow.
Do the math. So if we do the math on that, even just the math in a year, I think it had it over to $150,000 a year just by existing and having her coach account open. She wasn't even hitting Success Club anymore. This isn't my upline. This is like my great grandma coach. And I still don't think bad of her as an individual. I really don't.
Right.
She worked hard in the beginning when it was easier to build, when people were like, ooh, what's this coaching thing? Right now people are like, ugh, right? And so she would collect a couple grand a week from these team cycle bonuses just by her massive downline doing all this work.
Wow.
And so I would sit there and I would see that and I would feel sick. I would look at that. Sick isn't really a feeling. I'd feel like disgusted. I was disgusted with it. I was like, that's what's happening because you joined that many more years before me. And actuality, I work way friggin' harder than you. And I probably work way harder than you ever have just because of when the timing of when you joined.
Yeah.
And it's sick that happens. She doesn't, none of her numbers, she doesn't even sell anymore. It's all her downline doing the work. And that's how much money she earns. Just because she joined, you know, 6-7 years before me, and they're all the same things as me. She has no other secrets.
Yeah.
Earns that much money just because of timing. That's why I hate MLM. One of the reasons.
Yeah. And especially for someone like you who was so focused on serving your customers, to have her just like, all right, I'm just going to sit back and collect a check. And
there was no team call.
Yeah.
There was nothing. And when I asked her, let's recruit, let's do recruiting stuff, because I figured, okay, if I kind of get in her group and I connect with her a little more, I got nothing against her. Her response to me was, yeah, I totally, do you have any recruiting tips? Like, how, what are you doing? And I'm thinking, what? You joined this many years ago and you can't tell me how you built a team? No, you can't, because you did everything I'm doing now, but it was easier when it was new because there was the novelty of Beachbody.
Right, exactly. And because it wasn't already in every other person's house.
Yeah, like I can imagine. And I feel the same way about my upline and her upline. Her timing was impeccable. It was just when it launched in Canada. So everybody was joining. Everybody was joining. It was like, well, duh.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You get them to join. And then if they eventually quit, you inherit all their customers and get all the money.
Yeah. So I think that, wow, my ADHD is really showing in this podcast. So I think that when we were talking about your mental health, I'm really circling back. When we were talking about your mental health stuff, did you talk about like what happened, like where you noticed like your mental health, like you talked about the good parts, but we didn't talk about the bad parts. That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, yes. Okay. Okay, so let me tell you a story, because talking about mental health in this podcast is a biggie. So when I really noticed it starting to affect my mental health, it probably affected it long before that, but I was so deep into the cult and didn't believe Beachbody could be the problem. I wasn't able to recognize that maybe it was Beachbody that was affecting my mental health. But it was last summer, a year before I quit. And I had a really deep feeling inside of me that something was wrong, but I could never pinpoint what it was. And so what I was doing, and again, I couldn't pinpoint what it was until 6 months before I quit, is I was trying to change external things, which is often what people do when they have an internal problem, right? When they sense something is off on the inside, they try to change external things, right? You know, being a therapist, you understand that. You understand if somebody's depressed or anxious, anxiety, people try to change external things a lot, a lot. I've really noticed that as a common thing, like they'll buy things in order to calm that internal unsettled feeling, or they'll, you know, make new friends or try new business ventures or do all these things, right? And especially if you're in a manic state, even with bipolar or something, right? Is you're doing these things or making risks, right? And so what I noticed last summer when I started to feel off, I couldn't recognize that it was Beachbody and being in an MLM that was the problem. And so I felt deeply unhappy living where I lived. I felt deeply unhappy in my house, which is weird. I felt, and even though I love my house, we've moved since because we wanted to, because we have a nice new house now and we're happy here. But it was a really different feeling about how we went about it. I wanted to leave town. I wanted to leave town because I was sick of seeing people that I got involved with my MLM with. I was sick of running into people out in public that knew me that I didn't know them. I was sick of running into people at just a hockey game. I went to a local hockey game. Like, oh, you didn't accept me as a friend on Facebook. Why not? When I really had to say, because I don't want strangers in my life anymore. And I wanted to flee town because I thought that would be fix my problem. I thought that would fix the internal unsettled problem I had, as I thought a physical move to another town would fix it.
Wow.
So I didn't see that. And so I would say to anybody who is stuck in MLM, if you're having feelings like that, sit and really look at what you're involved in. And if you're trying to drastically change things on the outside, and I know people will leave a marriage, they'll like do jobs, quit their job, they'll do other things like that, is it can really, you really got to look and go, is it the MLM that I'm involved with is causing this problem? As somebody who can, I consider myself highly introspective and aware of my feelings and expressive, and I journal and I read and I think and I listen to podcasts and I try to solve when something's off. I try to get to the root of it. It took me 6 months to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a heavy moment for me, a heavy few months when I knew something was off and I was so down. And I went to visit my sister, who at the time lived across the country. And I remember saying to her, I just want to get the heck out of my hometown. I just want to move. I don't want to be there anymore. And really what it was is I wanted to get the heck out of my MLM so I didn't feel so disgusting all the time where I am.
Yeah. Damn. That is deep.
Because being in an MLM, this was a big moment for me. I don't know if it was your podcast or Roberta's where somebody said, and I was like, oh my God, they said being in an MLM changes the way you relate to people. I think it was Roberta's podcast. And I was like, it does change the way you relate to people because you are thinking the whole time, could you be a good rep?
Yep.
Could you be a good customer? I need your contact info so I can add you to my friends list. So I can message you and say hi. So you can see how awesome I am by all the stuff I post and want to join me because you'll get the feeling of FOMO. You need to follow what you're thinking. You go into conversations with people with an agenda. It changes the way you talk to people. You can't have a conversation that is genuine and authentic, which is the thing I pride myself on. And I didn't realize I was so inauthentic.
Yeah.
Because I wanted something from that person. That's disgusting to me. The whole tone of my voice changed when I talked about this, didn't it?
Thank you so much for talking about this.
You're welcome. It's big. That was a biggie. Thank you for asking that question because that really brought up that thing for me. It changed the way I interacted with people. It changes the fundamental way you interact with humans.
It really does.
Them as a prospect, as a customer, your conversation with them is you're not really present because you're wondering if they should join your MLM.
Exactly.
Instead of human, you're friggin' human.
Exactly. And it's so toxic. It really is. And then when you make a really good connection with someone and you're like, oh my gosh, they would be so perfect. But in reality, they would just be your perfect friend. And then you end up potentially ruining that friendship because you try to recruit them. And then if they don't want to, you're like, well, you don't support me. So bye.
You know, I never actually invited my older friends to join me. I never did because I was like, I just can't, I can't do it. I can't. And so that should have been a sign right there.
Yeah.
I always knew I would never ask my close friends. My sister joined and that was fine because it was just like, let's do these workouts. She lost over 100 pounds and it was awesome. I was proud of her and I'm still proud of her. And so, you know, I don't feel weird about that. My mom tried portion fix and it worked for her for a while. So I didn't feel bad about that either. And anytime they joined, they just used my stuff anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of my favorite things to ask ex-Beachbody people is what their honest opinions on Shakeology were.
I bought it for 6 years and I drank it every day. I spent $20,000 on products in my time in Beachbody. Oh, the look on your face. I wish people could see it. God. Yeah, I did. And my husband drank it every day. That's why that cost was so high. We drank Shakeology, Recover, Energize, Hydrate, Seasonal Shakeology. We had Beach Bars. I did the 3-day refresh, you name it. I did all of it. I bought Bevy, everything. Everything. So my honest opinion on Shakeology,
yeah,
I like it. I like the taste of it. I like what it is, but there's a caveat to this. I like it. I think it's good. I think it does good things. I think it's vitamins in a glass. I had my OBGYN look at it when I was pregnant with my third, and I was like, is this safe? Can I have this? He has a thick European accent. My dear, this is just vitamins, he said. Okay, so I'm safe. He's like, oh yeah, this is great. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll keep drinking it. We rarely got sick in 6 years. Because we were consuming something that was so vitamin rich, right? And it has like 300% of your RDA of, I'm not going to pump up Shakeology too much here, but I'm going to give a caveat in a sec. 300% of your RDA of vitamin C. It has lots of iron. It has B vitamins. Like, and we would drink it. And it was a convenient one-handed meal. So I loved that. However, they have an exact counterpart called Vega All-in-One. And it is the exact same thing.
Really?
Yep. So that is what we consume, and it is less than half the price. So, yeah. So did I like Shakeology? Yes. Do I believe it's a good product? Yes. I like the taste of it. I consumed it daily. I ain't paying MLM prices anymore, though. So I drank Vega All-in-One, and I did my friggin' research, and I looked at every single nutrition thing, like every single vitamin. I found a really good website that compared them and gave every single profile and everything on it. So the only difference between Vega, and when I say Vega, I mean the Vega All-in-One, it's the more expensive. It's the Shakeology replacement, not Vega Plus Greens, not just Vega Sport, Vega All-in-One. Is the only difference is, you're writing this down, aren't you? So the only difference is the superfoods are just regular, like, plants. They're not, like, from, I don't know, wherever the heck they get their superfoods, all over the globe. So that's the only difference, is that it's like real vegetables, like spinach and broccoli and all of that stuff. It tastes delicious. Delicious. Love it.
But wow. That's awesome. You're actually the first person, I think, on this podcast to tell me that they actually liked Shakeology.
I did. You know, I'm also vegetarian, and I'm like, I eat mostly vegan. I don't even eat a ton of dairy or anything. So I'm not picky in terms of things that taste earthy and naturally. I'm like, oh, that's good. I eat all that stuff. Like, I'm kind of more used to, like, processed stuff.
Yeah.
I don't want to shame anybody for not liking Shakeology. That's cool. Don't like Shakeology. Yeah. I don't care if you do. I'm not like really picky when it comes to, like, natural foods. I'm like, it's natural. It's good.
No, that makes sense, because there is definitely, like, an earthy taste to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that some people just can't handle that. I can't handle it. That's for sure.
Yeah. I know a lot of people were like, oh, this is gross. So I'm like, I like it. I like the, like, I'd actually make mine into like a spoonable, almost like a Dairy Queen Blizzard, and I'd eat it with a spoon.
Ooh.
So part of it is, like, I think I really crafted how to blend it up.
Yeah.
But don't go thinking I liked every flavor, because I didn't. I only drank the vegan ones because the dairy doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, the difference I really noticed since having Vega is it digests way better. I noticed Shakeology is hard on your stomach. Like, it makes you gassy and bloated, and sorry if TMI, but I know a lot of people experience that. So I had to start taking digestive enzymes when I took it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know a lot of people have that experience that it makes them feel bloated and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Vega is just like, you just take it and you're good. You feel so good when you take it.
All right. Are you ready for my final question?
Give it. Bring it.
What is your anti-MLM why?
Oh, my God. Because 99% of people fail, because it's true. I recruited a lot of people. I recruited a lot of coaches. MLM eventually completely saturates, and the people at the top make money if they stick with it and do the things to grow. And then people who join late in the game lose money. It is a losing game. It's the same as gambling.
Yeah.
So it's pointless to join an MLM. I did it, and I busted my butt for 6 years, and I left, and I saw it, and I saw it happen, and I was part of it. I will never, ever join another MLM.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, and for sharing all of your story. And I know, like I said, I think we went all over the place in this episode, but I really just appreciate you making time for me and asking to come on the podcast. I do want you to share where people can find you again.
I hope people find me. I've been having some really great conversations, and I'm very non-judgmental. And if you're in an MLM and you just want to chat human to human, I will not shame you. And I also am not a mean girl. I don't make fun of people. And I don't do that kind of stuff. I'm completely parodying my own content. So there's a lot of humor and a lot of humility and compassion.
Yeah.
And hilarity. Like, I can't help it. I'm actually naturally quite a hilarious, goofy person. So on Instagram, I have no agenda there. I'm just there. Like, just hi. I'm just there. There's no, like, anything but me. So it's therapy underscore after underscore MLM.
Oh, I love it so much. And you've just been really, it's really interesting because you are so fresh out too, that mm-hmm. it's really interesting to kind of watch you process. That's what I've noticed as your posts have been going up, is just like, I'm watching you like deconstruct what you are doing. And it's, you know, for me, now that I've kind of done a lot of that, it's like really like cool to watch you do it and be like, wow, good job. And I think that other people that are in the process of getting out, it's going to be really helpful for them too, to just see you being like, okay, this is, and like holding yourself accountable is such a cool thing. And honestly, it's so healing. It's scary. It's so scary, but it's so cool.
I'm not scared. I've had a few people say that to me. Aren't you scared? I'm like, no, because that I was brainwashed. I thought that was right. Yeah. Why would I be? What? I'm not ashamed.
Yeah.
That was my story at the time. Like, I'm on the other side and it's helpful. The number of people that have reached out to me, honestly, I've had tears in my eyes sometimes. So I'm like, I can't believe sharing this has this much impact. And I have 6 years of content that pops up in my Facebook memory. I get to pick and choose every day when something comes up. What will I put out for today?
I know. Oh, yeah. The Facebook memories. I wrote an MLM parody song, and I need to share that with everyone because, oh my gosh, the cringe.
But tag me in it. You have to tag me in it because I love stuff like that. I love it. I've been making some funny reels and making fun of myself. And
so it came up in my memories a few days ago. A few weeks ago, and it was when I was kind of working on my mental health and stuff, and I was like, I don't know if I should share this right now. This is probably not the time, but I need to go back and share it because I feel like I'm ready to. I just need to make time to make it happen. But
you share it with me when you do. Thank you for following me. I love what you do, and I love that you read it because I know how hard it is to pick what you're going to follow. Yeah. And it's hard to pick and be careful who you follow because it's like, oh, you get inundated with content, right?
Yeah. Well, so people that follow me on Instagram, I'll follow just about everyone back, unless it's like somebody like that's just like just some sort of bot like sales account. I don't follow those back if I catch them, but sometimes I automatically just follow people. But yeah, I want to be accessible. Like the point of my Instagram is for me to be accessible to people. So Instagram is definitely the best way to get a hold of me. I know I have a couple of people that are probably listening that have sent me emails and I see them. I know that they're there, but emails are a doom thing for me. So I will get to them. They're on my list. They're on my to-do list. It's just very hard for me to read emails and then I'll like open them and then I'll mark them as unread and then I'll open them and then I'll mark them as unread.
I remember first messaging you, you're like, okay, so I'm not going to respond message again. So it prompts me to like, get back to you later. I'm like, I get it.
Yes. Yeah. Cause I put everyone that wants to be like on Instagram, when you're a creator account, you can have multiple inboxes.
Oh, so, this is new to me. I'm new to Instagram.
Yeah. So when you're a creator account, so what I do is I have like my regular inbox that like, is just like people talking to me regularly. And then once somebody says like, hey, like I want to be on the podcast, I move you over to the other inbox. That way, even when I am like, cause I'll start these conversations and I'm like, yeah, you should be on the podcast. And then they get lost in my inbox and I forget who it was. I forgot to write it down. We didn't schedule a day. And then I'm just like, hopefully they message me again, because the thing is like, I just can't remember everyone that talks to me.
And I'm so grateful that you made time for me. I kind of figured it wouldn't be super hard, to be honest, to get on a podcast, being that I was so deep and like I had made what Beachbody would call a success. I was like, well, people want to talk to people like that because we got dirt.
Yeah. But there are a lot of people that have dirt. So
oh yeah, there are. And actually I found it very interesting to listen to people that were in for only a couple months.
Yeah.
What their experience was. I'm like, dang girl, you smart. You got out fast.
I know. Yeah. It's really cool. But yeah. So anyways, thank you guys so much. Thank you, Michelle, for your time and for sharing your story. If you're not following already, if you can subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening. And also if you have the option to rate it, with 5 stars, it really helps to boost the podcast so that other people can find it when they're searching for podcasts to listen to. And we love that here. Also, you can take a screenshot, share it on social media, tag me in it. And if you're looking to be on the podcast, feel free to slide into my DMs, and I promise I will answer eventually.
Thank you, Danielle.
All right, everyone, have a fantastic weekend. Bye.